I sort of have a lot to say and nothing to say, and I don't know which will come out. This has been a really remarkable period. And it's very hard for me to describe it because it's still very much in flux and I don't have any I have no perspective on it, or very little. But a few things I know, and a few things are interesting. One is sort of a question that comes up, and it's part of the awakening experience. What happens when you no longer have your story? When your story no longer exists? Well, my first experience of that was relief and exhilaration, freedom, liberation. And then this thing starts to happen. Well, if you don't have a story, who are you? And I'm beginning to find that to be, if you will, the next stage of spiritual work. And I sort of thought I was past the stage of spiritual work, but what I'm discovering is there's no past the stage. And by spiritual work, I mean facing what is as openly, as lovingly, as surrendered as you possibly can. It's much easier to face what is if you have an identity, because you can pocket things. You can say, well, that goes there and this goes there. I don't have to think about that. I don't have to deal with that. When all the identity disappears, you are with everything. You deal with everything that arises. And stuff that arises as you get older is powerful. Not that it isn't powerful through your whole life, but as you approach the normal falling away that happens with people, like retirement, bodily functions that don't work the way they used to, self-image that doesn't hold up. That's just part of the human, normal human experience. And if you have any friends who are retiring and who don't know what to do when they wake up in the morning, that's a big deal. And if you have your whole person disappear, that's very similar, but seems somehow deeper and more demanding. One of the things that seemed to fall away from me, which I found very unexpected, was the teacher. So here I am teaching, and I have no idea what I'm talking about at a certain level. But it's still talking. It's still talking. If it means anything to you, you should listen. If it doesn't mean anything to you, go find a teacher who still thinks they know what they're doing. But I have been talking rather a lot recently about not knowing. And there seems to be a greater truth for me in not knowing than in knowing. And in operating on that principle. So if you want to go to a teaching or to a teacher who knows something, you should no longer come here. Because I truly don't get it on a lot of levels. And I'm pretty much okay with that, but it's a little bit tricky in terms of being a teacher. I will tell you from my own experience, day to day, week to week, that I keep approaching what I will call nothingness, absolute nothingness. And Rudy told us from day one that that was, I don't know if he called it the goal of spiritual work, but certainly what we discover in spiritual work, a kind of absolute nothingness. As long as there's anyone to react to nothingness, you will find it unpleasant. And in that nothingness, the thing that is reacting will reveal itself in a big way. So what happens is the story version of you, the ego version of you, may have risen and evaporated in the awakening sense, but there's still something there observing in an existential way the absolute nothingness of all that is. That's really spiritual work, because that nothingness will diminish ultimately, or absorb, or push you out of the last remains of being something. Whatever that is, it's no longer story, it's something else. It's fundamental, essential you. It just... And what you arrive at least in this moment of my experience, is not what I called presence for a long time after this awakening last year. Presence had quality. Presence was blissful, beautiful, consciousness, truth, absolutely lovely, and something that one wanted to hold on to. I wanted to hold on to it. And then presence began to not be there. And so I kept going, what's there? What's there? And nothing is there. I don't mean this as a scary principle, guys. I mean, I know this is, I'm talking to some of you directly, and I'm talking to a lot of you who are processing like mad, trying to figure out what I'm talking about. You will never figure out what I'm talking about. It cannot be figured out. It cannot be understood. It cannot be intellectualized. It cannot be processed. It is something that arises or arrives or presents itself, and it is fundamental. So it's neither joyous nor unjoyous, neither light nor dark, neither beautiful nor ugly. It's just and everything that reacts to that in your mind or my mind is going to get broken apart. Atavistic's early archetypal truth will start to rise up inside you. Stuff that is no longer personal, stuff that is part of the human condition, rises up, in my experience, to face nothingness. And it doesn't like it. In some fundamental way, it doesn't like it. And that to me now is the core of spiritual practice. It's sitting with this resistant, judgmental force, and there's nothing I can do with it other than go. And it starts to scrape and rub and diminish and wash away and cleanse, I think, until there is nothing reacting to nothingness. I'm simply putting this on the record. I don't know how this appeals to any of you in terms of a lesson or a teaching. Probably not well. I think everyone doing spiritual work wants to attain something, wants to arrive at something. Mostly what you want to arrive at is peace, but peace in opposition to struggle. So the peace is the yin without the yang. And there is no yin without the yang. So for you to have peace means you have somehow given up the other half of a whole, and it's not complete. Even nothingness, I have to say, has somethingness as a result. You can't have nothingness without the idea of somethingness. And that's a really interesting state. So the reason I can't teach you much at this moment is that's where I stand, right between nothingness and somethingness. There's something with, if you will, being the yin and the yang, and realizing the what-isness of that. What I've come to understand in recent weeks has really been very interesting. I've had a wonderful life, and I've had a wonderful marriage, and I've had a wonderful experience of being a parent, and I've had an extraordinarily joyful may be the wrong word, but apparently successful career. It took a lot of work. So I've had the stuff that life offers, and I've watched how totally ephemeral it is. How it goes like that. That the mind cannot hold on to the resume. It cannot and does not. But what I am finding is real in life, in a sense of being truly worthy, is what I will call friendship or connection or complete and absolute sharing of oneself with another person or a multiple of people. At the core of friendship is love. But it's not a love that requires anything. It's an appreciation of another being. It's two people truly appreciating and sharing with each other. That is really meaningful. I've discovered, of course, that love is worth anything you can get to arrive at that place. The experience of love is what life is, I think, about. Now, this is about the greatest cliche of all time, so nothing I'm saying here is very profound. But love is why we're here. And I even have this theory, but this is theory, that love is all there is. And that everything that gets in the way of that has to be undone, if you will, to get back to it. Because that which stands between you and love is this mindful judgment, this thing that says, this is good and this is bad, I want this, I don't want that. True love suspends the judgment. True love is. And I believe it's the ground of being. But I may be wrong. So, sorry about that. the great gift of having a granddaughter who's now 8 months old. And I have found in recent weeks that the best relationship of my life is with her. She gets me completely. I get her completely, and there's not a word between us. We just are together in a way that is perfect and beautiful, unspoken clarity. And I love every minuscule second of it. And there is a truth in there, in the moment, that is transcending everything else. The hardest part about what's going on for me now is this sense that something is pushing me out of my old life. I can't tell you what that is or how it's working. It's really uncomfortable. I don't know where it's going to go. Partly, it's trying to push me out of being a teacher. It has already pushed me out of being a filmmaker. Every identity thread that I've had, it seems to just be pushing me out of. It's really uncomfortable. The easy stuff fell away. I have to say, this awakening thing was easy, and I thought it was complete and fundamentally done. And I thought, wow, that was simple. It's really not simple. It may be simple, but it really is the beginning of something. And I can't describe to you what it is. I can't tell you what it is. I am in process with it. So whether I should sit here in front of you on a weekly basis and pontificate seems kind of strange. I'm willing to sit here and talk the process. If it speaks to you at all, great. If this seems completely alien to you at this point, then you shouldn't come. Why would you make an effort to come hear this? I don't know. On the other hand, I posed this to one of my students in New York last week, because he drives 3 hours from Boston to the farmhouse and back every Sunday. And there are guys who drive 4 hours each way. And I said to this man, Arkady, who I deeply love, I said, why do you do this? I have nothing to give you. And he said, it's instinct. He can't not do it. He can't not come. That was a good answer to me, because I get that. I used to go to Rudy. You know, when Rudy was taught every night, I went every night. Or Blanche and I did. We found a way to go no matter what was happening. Career, children, it didn't matter. I had to be there. I had to go to that place. And I don't know what Rudy had to offer other than this, arrival at nothingness, which he talked to me about from day one. He said, that's where you're going to get. In the end, there's nothing. He also said something else that was wonderful. He said, I don't want students in the end, I want friends. And I'm telling you exactly the same thing. I don't care about students anymore. I really don't. I love friends. And if you guys want to be friends with me, I would just love that. I would come sit with you, have dinner with you, walk around the block with you, much more happily than sitting here as a teacher trying to tell you something, because I have nothing to tell you. Nothing. Nothing. But somehow, that nothing being shared may be meaningful. Or not. So it's kind of a decision you guys have to make. I'm going to probably keep sitting here for a while until this thing really just says stop, until it just goes done, which could happen. Unfortunately, or fortunately, from January to April, when I'm normally here, I will have to be in New York. You know, I think I wrote to you about the play now going to Broadway, so, and I'm going to be very part of that. I think I'm going to be part of it. It's on the schedule. I really enjoy it. I really enjoy it. And it's important to me, I feel, to be there. So I'm going to be part of that. So I won't be here on a regular basis. I will try to come in once a month, is what I will hope to do. to see you and to see my granddaughter and to see my wife, who will be here much of the time. So that will be on the schedule. All of you can show up or not, you know. And if I'm here for a long time, we can just schedule lunches and dinners and walks around the block, which will be terrific. So I think that's all I have to say. Are there any questions about any of this?
For things that don't involve the connection and the love and the friendship, are you finding any lack of motivation?
Total.
Yeah.
Absolute lack of motivation. Mm-hmm. I do not know what to do with the day. And I retired, basically, from my film work. And I get up in the morning and I go, now what? And I haven't found anything to step in for that. It's really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So part of what's going on in my life right now is finding what now. You know, it hasn't announced itself. I think it will at some point, and things arise. I mean, the musical thing, you know, I thought it would be another year from now, but it came very quickly, and suddenly it's filling the space. So I may be in this sort of existential quandary now a year from now instead of now, but whatever it is, very, very real lack of motivation. Mm-hmm. I think it may mean that there's nothing to do, but just sitting absolutely still doesn't seem to quite cut it for me. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people I know, awakened guys, ladies, who feel fine with that. I haven't. So I can't explain what that's about.
Anything you'd like to share about the process that you went through in London or the biblical floods in New York?
I've talked about it a little bit online, in the class talks. I'll tell you what happened in London, which was really interesting. In Manchester, when we did the musical, I had nothing to lose. In London, suddenly it felt like I had something to lose, and I got very caught in the dynamic of the show, which was very interesting to me. I cared about it deeply. I cared about it being successful. I cared about it being well received by Londoners in the way it had been in Manchester. I wanted it to speak to people. My investment in wanting it, in rooting for it, became very powerful. And I talked about this early on in the awakening stage. It was when I worried about Talia. She was being born, and she was we told that they were in labor, and now 4 or 5 hours had gone by, and she had already been pushing, and we hadn't heard anything. I started to worry, and I started to really care about the outcome. I wanted her to be well. I wanted her to be healthy. The wanting of that, I thought, does that mean that Bruce is pushing for this, or is there something else? And I came to this feeling, right or wrong, that the universe roots for us, that the universe cares deeply about outcome. Now that may be wrong, and that's why this is tricky to teach, but my feeling is the universe wants everything that we want in some fundamental way, and will move time and space to make it happen, if it can. That's my feeling. My investment with what happened in London was very great, and it caused a lot of disturbance for me, and I kept forgetting my center. And it was very, and I really was thrown by that. And then I described this on one of my other talks. My sister and brother-in-law arrived, and my long story, but he's really an awakened guy, just in recent time. They arrived at my doorstep, and whoa, connection occurred. Connection. And it's that idea of, if two people gather in my name, I am there. Christ said that. But if two people gather together to have a spiritual connection or bring that to the table, instant sangha, instant joy. And that's what happened. And I learned a great lesson about how much other is important, how much I care about others. These are relatives, and I love them, but friends are the same thing. I've had friends recently who bring me up out of sometimes the, we'll call it, the nothingness or the struggle mode or whatever that is. So London was struggle with great lessons, one great lesson after another. I think, forgive me, this has been talked about before, but you know, we've had wonderful audience responses to this show, and you were there, so you mean people jump to their feet, and people are really, in most cases, really loving this But we had one critic from the New York Times who came and hated it. And that was really painful for me, and I've talked about it, so forgive me for repeating it, guys. But this is a guy who I respect enormously, but I really get the sense that he likes his emotion from the top of his head to his neck. He doesn't want it to go below that. He doesn't want to feel emotion or spiritual connection. And if you present it to him really strongly, he will fight back. That's my analysis of him. But it was very painful for me and caused a lot of struggle. And so I began to go, well, what's this awakening thing if I'm in such a state of discomfort and struggle? And that's a lot of what's going on for me, is I'm really trying to understand the primal forces and the Bruce forces, and trying to work through all of this in a way that's much deeper than anything I've ever had to work through before, for reasons I don't understand. Because I've had a career that's been very tricky, like anybody I know who has a movie career has gone through it in many, many ways, as you know, you guys know. But anyway, the experience there was wonderful, really wonderful, and I'm about to go through it again. And so all of the same issues are there. I'm trying to be a little more gracious with it, but it's become much more, if you think opening in London is a big deal, try opening a show on Broadway. People inflate it in so many ways, and it's hard not to get caught up in that inflation. So it's been a very fascinating time. As for the floods in New York, the floods were metaphorically powerful. They stripped away a lot of stuff on our property, literally took out the pond, pushed bridges aside, created these gorges on our lawn, you know, rock. I mean, unbelievable stuff from that flood. And I felt it was like my own body being ripped open. That's really what it felt like, my soul being exposed. And it didn't feel good, it doesn't look good, but it's been really powerful for me. And the dynamic of it is all ongoing. But here's this guy who thought he was above and detached or free of everything, and it's just not true. It's not true. And I, you know, that's humbling on some level, shame-producing, really. I was very shamed by it. I thought, how can I admit to all of my students where I've announced this great awakening that I'm still working like anybody else to go deeper and deeper, but I am working without Bruce, which is something odd. Mm-hmm. I always had Bruce to fall back on. All of the structures of Bruce, they really have gone. So what I've got, I was talking to Blanche about it last night, like a little kid. I feel like a 3-year-old kid who has no idea and just wants to hold on to somebody's hand. And that hand is, at this point, a spiritual hand. But I have nothing to support me other than my granddaughter, who's 8 months old, and my friends, and my wife, and my children. Interesting, you know? And they're wonderful.
And the universe.
But the universe comes really, in many ways, through those people. It doesn't, you know, with my granddaughter, we walk around and we touch the trees, and we smell the flowers, and we rub the grass, and she reintroduces me to the universe, if you will. But the universe, for most of us, is a manifested form. It's manifested. And the unmanifest is something we've worked with. And this class, you know, is really an extraordinary experience of energy exchange. And I love that energy exchange. But it's all this physical made subtle. It's still physical. It's still material. It seems immaterial, but it's still molecular, it's still emotional, it's still neurons firing, synaptic firings. All of this is going on in the class. It's still subtle, but it's also still material. What's happening in the nothingness is that it's not material. There's no material there. Nothing. Nothing. It's like deep sleep. Nothing. Anyway. Any other questions? I don't know if I should put this online. Throw everybody. But it's now a series of tapes. I've been making a series of talks that are probably more disturbing for people than anything else. But, you know, this is what's going on. Oh.
Rui used to say how unimportant he
teacher and the students, the issue of his being there, or also when he would tell us to, or encourage us to come and sit with other teachers, and that it was totally improper to question whether it be this teacher or that teacher, or who would be there, because he would open and just receive. And I, like everyone that I know, love to hear Rudy talk. And it was certainly in the beginning easier for me to accept that and to feel that there was something of value in the talk. But ultimately, I didn't go to Rudy for his talk. I don't come here for your talk. I am not.
That's probably wise.
It's just I am nourished by your being, and that's what I come for.
Well, let me put it this way. I get the exact same nourishment from your being and the being of everyone in this room. And what happens to me is of absolute equal aspect. There's no one here who gives me less than Rudy gave me, in a way, because everyone is here as a manifestation of the singular truth that Rudy was an embodiment of, that I'm an embodiment of, and everyone in this room is an embodiment of. And the minute you start gradating, making lesser, better, more, other, you get in the way of that. It's one thing. It's one thing that's happening. We are all that being. Learning to recognize that being, learning to draw from that, to be in the presence of that and see that you are in the presence of that, is an extraordinary thing. It is easier to do with Rudy than it is to do with George Bush, forgive me, or somebody of that ilk, for me. But learning to do that with all of these people is the essence of spiritual awakening, of opening. It's just sharing being. It's just one being. And finding that truth is part of what takes place when you are no longer there. It's just this.
I took exception, and paid exception, with just the street concept that Rudy was not different from any other teacher. Rudy was substantially different.
But this is a discussion that we can have on many levels. I think, yes, clearly Rudy was a remarkable teacher and a remarkable being. And there are attaining something in material life in this world is an extraordinary thing, and Rudy had great attainment. And yes, we can judge on that level, but the work is to be open to being itself, and from its highest manifestation to its lowest, however we can do it, to just be open. I don't want to put 2 hours on this tape about that.
It's just that what you and Rudy and the exception is that I find is the effort that you make, the effort that he made. That was exception.
Absolutely.
And most of us aren't willing to make that effort.
That's true. If you want real spiritual attainment, if you want to become nothing, let's say, and I don't know many people who do, but if you want to become nothing, which is what you will become if you keep doing this, you will attain something extraordinary and then it will go away. And you can't get to that without unbelievable effort, and then it adds up to nothing, in the most wonderful sense.
If you really want to be nothing.
If you really want to be nothing. And if you really want to be nothing, let's put it this way, you will discover truth. Because that's what you are.
At what price? What price freedom?
Yeah, what price freedom? Good. Mm. I love you guys very much. You're all victimized by this public dialogue at the moment, but it's important. It's an important step along the way of something. I don't know what we're doing here other than articulating something that's happening. And it may add up to nothing, but that's okay.